It's now my pleasure to introduce y'all to Mary Lou Ariakta. We're very honored to have her here. Mary Lou was one of the 50 founders of the Southern Foodways Alliance, but travails and other things have not allowed her to come, and we're very honored that she's able to join us at what is a quite appropriate time. I'll tell you a bit about her. She's a poet, an essayist, a storyteller. She's the seventh generation of her family, born and bred in Southern Appalachia. She grew up in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and is most noted for creating a unique fusion of her Cherokee and Appalachian heritage with science. Her third book, Selu, Seeking the Corn Mother's Wisdom, was a quality paperback book club selection, and the audio version was nominated for a Grammy Award. A poem, Mother Root, from her first book, Abiding Appalachia, Where Mountain and Atom Meet, is inlaid in the marble border of the Fine Arts Walkway at UCLA Riverside. Her life and work are profiled in the Oxford Companion to Women's Writing in the U.S., and she's been featured in three different PBS films. She will no doubt enchant you, and we are very honored to have her with us. I thank you very much for coming. Enjoy.
Thank you. Thank you so much, and thank you, all of you, so much for coming after lunch. You know, that's the siesta time, and it's so good of you to come on back up the hill, and I hope you will enjoy the stories and what we're going to talk about. Is this working well for the back? Good. And John T., I'm very proud to be here, and as Minnie Pearl used to say, I'm proud to be here. Yes, because Ronnie and I shared a similar travail, and so I was headed to Oxford when I was struck with this, and due to chemotherapy, I now address you as silver-headed instead of black-headed, but I'm so proud to have it, and I'm so proud to be here and well, and for Ronnie, too, that she's here and well, and yeah, we're going. Where is Ronnie? Well, anyway, it's those mountain jeans, somebody told me, that helps get you through. But one of the interesting things on television recently was Private Jessica Lynch. You remember about that? But I want to take out one strand of that story after she was rescued. And I know all of you know that her best friend, Lucy Piestewa, was the first American woman to be killed in Iraq. And she was Pueblo. So when I was recently in Santa Fe, I think they're going to rename a mountain for her. And she was roommates with Jessica Lynch from Appalachia, from West Virginia, I believe. And interestingly, after she was rescued and when she was in the hospital, the reporters, and you know, they had their agenda. They came in to talk to the family. Well, her aunt was working at a counter in a store. It looked like a little family dry goods store. It had a little cash register, and the aunt was working. She never deferred to the big press being there at all. She was completely at her ease. And they said, and what is it you think made Jessica able to survive this? And the aunt replied without even looking up and continuing to work, why, it's in our blood, it's in our DNA. We never give up. And I loved it. I said, mountain people never give up. It's in the DNA, it's in our genes. And I love the fact that she was so balanced, you know, and so democratic with a little D in her soul, that she was not deferring to NBC or CBS or anything. They were asking the family a question. And she would, that's all she said to them. But I think that shows something about what Ronnie weaves back into what Ronnie was saying about Appalachia being a place of connection, of family, of independence. And, of course, we do have our skeletons that run around in the closet also, like everybody else. But still, We like to be very independent, and there is the phrase, I don't like to be beholden to someone that do anything for you, but, you know, keep it balanced. So what I'm going to talk about this afternoon is corn. Selu is the Cherokee name for corn, and it has two spellings. If it's spelled with a little letter, Selu, the grain. If it's spelled with a capital letter, capital S-E-L-U, it means the corn mother or the life force, the natural law that the Creator put within the corn. And we're going to be talking in a cycle and a circle about corn, both as a grain and as a way of living, a law of life. I'll tell you a little about the Cherokee Nation. As Ronnie was describing Southern Appalachia, so that was the Cherokee Nation at its zenith, the part of the eight states, you know, Virginia, Kentucky, all the way down, a little bit of North Carolina, East Tennessee, Georgia, all of that area. So the Cherokee have always been mountain-formed people, people who for 2,500 years, specifically as the Cherokee, identified from North Carolina in the mountains of Tuwa, where it was the nation was founded, have always lived in that eight-state region. And then, as you know, the nation, by treaty and by force, was reduced over the course of 200 years. And then at the end, in 1838, there was the Great Removal under order of President Andrew Jackson, in which 17,000 approximately Cherokee men, women, and children were marched 1,000 miles into Oklahoma. And what put the seal of death on it was on that it would go through in that manner was the discovery of gold in Georgia. And at that point, the law changed. No American Indian person could testify in court. And no matter what was done to you or your house or your wife or your children, you could not testify at all, and neither could your friends. No one could testify against any white man. White women weren't doing the crimes, but in other words, the Cherokee were completely disenfranchised and sent into the West. And a small number remained in North Carolina, which now forms the Cherokee Reservation, about 5,000 Cherokee in North Carolina and 120,000 in what is not a reservation, but it's called a government reserve in Oklahoma. So there are many, many, many Cherokee, and there is a diaspora of Cherokee also. And then, very interestingly, I think, you know, that we haven't even discussed sex in America yet, despite the fact that there's a whole lot said of it, but we haven't really gotten down and talked about whose child is whose child and who of us are cousins, real in truth, in verity and in truth. And I will want to tell you a little about the context. We're talking, Ronnie was saying, you have to have a cultural context to understand food and to understand people. And this is, the Cherokee are part of the whole Appalachian group. And I set out from the very beginning in my work to always have it say Cherokee Appalachian on the back. That was in 1978. And my mother said, nobody will read it because first they'll see Cherokee, then they'll see Appalachian, and then they'll think you're too dumb to have written the book. And I said, well, Mama, let's just try it. And she said, well, I think that that's a good idea. So I've done right well. And but the Cherokee were, and they're like most other Southeastern American Indian nations were mother descent, matrilineal, matrilocal, and matrifocal. And it's very interesting. The French are always doing the sexual research among the nationalities. You know, through history, they're always the ones asking the question, oh, what happened here? They were even going to take male dogs to the moon, you know, in the Jules Verne's book, just in case there were any female dogs up there and they wanted to bring back puppies. You know, they're all, but, but it's so funny, you know, in history, who asks which questions. But anyway, the Cherokee and the French got along quite well. And the French asked the Cherokee why they traced the descent through the mother. And they said, you always know who your mother is, and the womb cannot lie. The womb cannot lie. And in the social structure, the women had equal power with the men on the council. No child, no Cherokee child could be disinherited. You always had your mother line. There were seven mother clans, and people sat in the assembly, in the council, in a circle around the sacred fire up until 1822, according to their mother clans. Seven mother clans, and the man took his name, went to the mother, his wife's name, you know, when they married, and the women hold the land in trust so that to this day, no Cherokee land can pass, say if you are, say you go overseas to school, you're a Cherokee woman, you marry a Scot. Like, he comes back. He can be an American citizen, but he can't inherit your land. It has to pass the bloodline through the mother onto the blood children and on down. Because you see the complications that could arise. Aren't y'all going to laugh? Don't you see the complications that could arise? Where is Ronnie? I think that's one of the things mountain people do, too. We just kind of slip something off and then don't laugh much, and you're not sure whether you're supposed to or not. The song of the grandmothers, which will give you an idea of the Cherokee structure between the genders, which continues to this day. And this shawl is my storytelling shawl, and it the reason you wear shawl in the powwow or wherever your dancing ceremonial is to acknowledge that the you're there not of your own strength, but of your ancestors, and that all the ancestors before you and collectively known as the grandmothers are there with you. The Cherokee, traditional Cherokee today still follow this traditional way, and it's a poem is a quick way to get down to rules. This is called the Song of the Grandmothers. I am Cherokee. My people believe in the spirit that unites all things, capital S, great spirit. I am woman. I am life force. My word has great value. The man reveres me as he reveres Mother Earth and his own spirit. The beloved woman is one of our principal leaders. Through her, the spirit often speaks to the people. In the great council at the Capitol, she is a powerful voice. Concerning the fate of hostages, her word is absolute. Women share in all of life. We lead sacred dances. In the council, we debate freely with men until an agreement is reached. Government by consensus. When the nation considers war, we have a say, for we bear the warriors. I've thought about that a lot in our time. If 50% of the Congress was composed of those who bore the warriors. How would the decision be made? Sometimes I go into battle. I also plant and harvest. I carry my own name and the name of my clan. If I accept a mate, he and our children take the name of my clan. If there is deep trouble between us, I am as free to tell him to go as he is to leave. It's known among Indian people as tearing the blanket. Our children and our dwelling stay with me. As long as I am treated with dignity, I am steadfast. I love and work and sing. I listen to the Spirit. In all things, I speak my mind. I walk without fear. I am Cherokee. Now, this tradition is not, as Ronnie was saying, where it seems like always people are talking about the past, but she was bringing the past up to the present. The Cherokee Nation to this day is run in this way in the East and the West. And when you talk with Cherokee people, they may be dressed exactly like you. Their skin tone may be almost like yours, too, because back to my other remark about the true sexual nature of America's sexual history, where there are men and women, you know, things happen. And so families are formed. And the Cherokee had a great deal in common with the Scots-Irish, the Celtic peoples coming in, who in their ancient times were also mother descent and used to very strong women, if you remember Boadicea, who turned back the Romans. And also with when African people came into the mountains, there was also families founded that way. So if all of us, because they had strong familial traditions and strength for the women too. And so if we really look at who we are, we need to emphasize more what brings us together. And certainly this whole Southern Food Alliance is about that. It's about bringing people together, what we have in common, what we share. And I'm going to tell you what in 1991, I decided that there were two grandchildren on the way and that I needed to do something for the country, something little, but something that would last, you know, something that I could do. And I decided that what I would like to do is write a book about, to take something simple that all Americans know and are familiar with. And what is more familiar to all of us than corn? We eat it, drink it. I know we drink it, but I can't include alcohol in with corn mother. That's forbidden. I can't do that. I didn't mean drink. I meant, you know, we grind it up. We have it in oil. We have it in meal. We had it for lunch. But when, and most people know that corn was a gift from the Indians. You learn that kind of when you're in school. But what you don't learn, what most Americans do not learn, is that the gift had two parts. And one part was salu, the corn grain. The other part was salu with the capital letter, the corn mother, the life force within the corn, which when you know the story, which the Cherokee made, coded this wisdom of the corn mother into a story, because we all know that people remember a story better than they remember a fact. So they made this story, which cannot, the spine of it can never, ever be changed. And it was the intent that this corn should be transferred to the people coming in its wholeness, the grain and the spiritual side, or the natural law that governed it. But there were several barriers. One was that the language. Second was, it wasn't the Western way of thought at that time for somebody to say, now, they were hungry. The immigrants were hungry. No time for the story to tell what it meant, what the plant meant. I mean, they wanted it in the ground as fast as possible to eat naturally. And then the third was that there were just cultural barriers of misunderstanding. And so I want to make sure we start out on the same foot about this story of the Corn Mother, and that which every Cherokee knows. Every time, and also all of the nations of the Iroquois, the Pueblo people, the Navajo people, all corn-growing people have their Corn Mother story that tells them the wisdom that the Corn Mother teaches. And I went to CNN to show you the kind of world we live in now. You know what? Here, corn has been grown for 7,000 years, and I wrote the book, you know, several hundred pages, hoping that when people read this, that they would think of the wisdoms of the Corn Mother, think of their own spiritual traditions and truths that come from their own culture, that we would put together what we had in common and make a new balance. And maybe that was why the Creator gave the gift of corn to begin with. Because the Indian people say that corn is a gift of the Creator. See, it's a different way of saying that. In other words, the source of everything is from the Creator. And therefore, there is a natural law of science that governs everything in the entire universe. And we are all interconnected. Well, we're doing a lot with ecology and environment now. But this is deeper. It's connected on the almost like the subatomic level, that everything that moves here, the reaction over here. And so you have to keep the world in balance and harmony. And so I thought, well, just telling the story might, and carrying the story around to different people, putting the gift back together, maybe that would be a small contribution to helping create a new harmony in our society. And see, like this Food Ways Alliance is part of that. Movement every way we can to make a new balance. So I will say the poem now. Before the story of Selu. It's called I Offer You a Gift. Still of the night, sun deep in sleep, moon on the wane, cricket, bird, and wind lay low as rhythms of earth and sky suspend, prepare to turn. Awake in the dark, you know, I know, we may not make it. Mother Earth may not make it. Against the downward pull, against the falter of your heart or mine, I offer you a gift, a seed to greet the sunrise. Ganitzi Selu, corn, mother of us all, her story. And so we'll be together on this. I want to emphasize that Selu is not a goddess. Please never say, if I ever hear her referred to as a goddess, I have to get on a plane and go correct quietly with my shotgun. Did you say you were talking about Selu as a goddess? Well, now. Maybe you want to rethink that. Here's from the book of Job, quite out of the Bible, I mean, apart from the Bible. The book of Job, as you all know, is one of the seven wisdom books of literature in the whole world. And what does it say? But ask the beasts, and they will teach you. The birds of the air, and they will tell you. Or the plants of the earth, and they will teach you. And the fish of the sea will declare to you. Who among all these does not know that the hand of the Lord has done this? In his hand is the life of every living thing and the breath of all mankind. Does not the ear try words as the palate tastes food? Wisdom is with the aged, and understanding in the length of days. So it's not about a goddess. It's about what Job was talking about. That if we notice nature and the laws in there, then we will learn the original instructions from the Creator. Though every book and every electronic device be destroyed, the laws are still out there. And that's the American Indian view traditionally. So Selu, the version I use in here, and the reason I like the doll, the little, what do you call it? Bobby, the little bobbing corn doll. This corn mother has humor. And if you notice, one of the jokes among Indian people is, oh, well, we know who made that that commercial. Said that, you see, there's all, the Indians always has a tear rolling down. It's like, you know, that guy in the canoe. And so the people who come to Indian conferences are amazed because everybody's laughing and rolling, you know, making jokes, having a good time. So the corn mother does too. And you can tell that this story is told directly from the Cherokee by two Cherokee scholars who went to a Cherokee storyteller. And he told them the story of Selu in Cherokee, which they, Cherokee-speaking full-bloods, translated into English. So the humor in these is really Cherokeean. And here, at first, I'll tell the story of the birth of Selu. Now, Kanadi, who is her, will become the first man and her partner, and has a whole cycle of stories of his own. But Kanadi was very lonely. He was on the earth. He was very lonely. And so he was killing too many animals, and he was sleeping in the sun, which the animals said, even we have sense enough not to do that. But Kanadi was, you know, it was concluded by the council of the animals that he was bored, and that was his great problem. So they said to the Creator, please do something about Kanadi. If he keeps on like this, he is going to ruin us. He's going to overkill the deer. And so the Creator caused a plant to grow down beside, that's a very important word, beside Kanadi's heart, and the green plant came up. And then out of the top of the green plant came a very beautiful Indian woman, full-grown woman, and she was singing. And Kanadi said, sounds like company to me. See? And then a storyteller always says, and though he had been alone for a long time, he remembered the goodness of his heart and remembered his manners and said very politely to her, won't you come down? And she said, just a minute. And again, Kanadi said, remembered the goodness of his heart, and he waited patiently. And Selu reached behind her on the plant and brought forth an ear of corn, because she said, you must always take your heritage with you. And so Kanadi helped her down, and they went home. And she began to cook the corn. And when the sweetness of the corn, the aroma went, Kanadi smelled it. Peace came to his own heart, and then peace came to the environment, because Kanadi was in balance. Selu had brought the law of respect, and they lived happily ever after. Now, this story is the first story of the birth of Selu, and the reason the spine of the story cannot be changed is because coded into that story, as you can see, is the model of how the genders are supposed to be with each other. Respectful, both of them strong, both of them respectful, equal. And in the Cherokee view, when the genders begin to treat each other badly, it seeps into the environment and into the institutions, and then you've got a mess. So we're very, very strict about saying respect for both genders, you know, and hold things in balance. Well, now the second story of Selu, she's grandmother, so she's gone up to where I was so happily heading when I started Selu. And she is now, she and Kanati have two grandsons. And you know how in the South, and this story comes out of the South, Oklahoma is among Indian people considered the Southeast, because that's where the culture went, came from the Southeast over there. So they just speak of their part of Oklahoma's Southeast. And they have, you know, a good sense of humor. So you know how sometimes people, elders, refer to the boys, and you think the boys are going to get home and they're 50 and 52 years old, and the boys, still the grandmother saying the boys are coming in. Well, anyway, Selu lived with Kanati and her grandsons. Kanati's gone in this story. He's off hunting, so doing something. And so the grandsons are great hunters, and these boys are about 19 and 20. They're grown. And so they notice that every time they go out hunting, when they come back, grandmother takes something, takes their meat and takes something she called grits and stirs it up in a great stew. It was so delicious. Grandmother, where did you get that? You don't need to know. That carries a certain Southern message, doesn't it? And then they went off and they came back again. And I said, Grandmother, where do you get these wonderful things you call grits? And she said, isn't this the second time I told you? You don't need to know. And so the boys said one to another, okay, let's spy on Grandmother and see where she gets those grits. And one of the brothers said, well, why don't you go do the spying and then you come tell me? A lot doesn't change in thousands and thousands of years. So the younger brother said, okay, I'll do it. So he went, and there was a hut with only one door and no window. And he saw Selu go in there every day with a basket. And when she came out, it was full of corn. And he looked through, and he said, well, she rubs her body, and the corn comes down in the basket. So he ran back and told his brother, you know, this is an unsavory thing. Our grandmother, why, she rubs her body, and all that corn comes off in the basket, and then she puts it in the stew. So the next time Selu serves stew, the boys said, well, Grandmother, we're sort of tired from hunting, and I don't think we'll have any stew today. And she said, you know my secret. You have spied on me. So I'm going to leave you. I'm going back to my original form. I'm dying to you. I'm going back to my original form. But before I go, let me tell you how to show respect, because you've not showed proper respect. So she told them how to take her body and drag it seven times around and seven times across a circle, and to bury her and to keep the watch, and that a green plant would come up, and on that plant would be an ear of corn, and out of the corn would come the tassel that would remind them of her hair, and they would be reminded that the corn mother loved them, and that she would feed all the people if they showed respect. And so the boys did as she said, and from one field they kept the seed corn and planted another field, another field, another field, until all the people were fed, until all the Indian nations were fed that would use corn. And It came from a woman, and it happened in the beginning. And so that those are the two stories that bring the guide for showing respect, the law of respect. If it goes, then that's it. Kanadi has his stories that tell of the law of respect for nature. But Salu, Grandmother Salu, is still referred to in the Cherokee Nation. So when you walk through a cornfield, if you remember the story, it may remind you of the wisdoms that are taught there. First, the corn is androgynous. The tassel is the male part. This is the female part. It's in balance. It's very straight. It's very strong. It's very nourishing. And in this speckled version, commonly called Indian corn, you see a plan of democracy or unity and diversity, because each kernel respects the space of the one next to it. There's red, yellow, black, brown, and white on this cob. But each one respects the space of the one next to it. And, you know, you can take this to four-year-olds and say, now, what would happen if this yellow one would say to this red one, be like me or get out of here? Or this white one would say to this brown one, be like me or get off this ear. And they began to fall backwards on the floor, the four-year-olds. They say, oh, it would all be over. You know, the home. I say, what about your home if you start doing this? Oh, little kids are so funny. You know, they just act it out. But they understand that the respect has to make space for the other one. And they can get that concept. And that's what American Indian people saw. We often say the law is in the corn. The law is in the seed. And so I stepped on CNN. And the interviewer said, 7,000 years of wisdom. She read in the little promo, you know, when she said, okay, can you get that down to 45 seconds? And I said, she said, just what is this book about? Can you get it down to 45 seconds? And I said, I can get it down to 3 seconds. No respect, no food. That's it. Isn't that great? And that's I hope that you will keep the story in your heart and think about the Corn Mother, because you're not thinking about anything that's in conflict with any spiritual belief you have, but adding something to the knowledge of Cherokee people and of the knowledge of what we're really eating when we go in a cornfield or when we see the corn. It is a reminder of the wisdom, as the book of Job said. And I think I still have 15 minutes. All right. Let me see. It seems like there's one more thing I wanted to say. I thought it was 1:15 to 2. Okay, I now have 1/2 a second. But I'm sorry, I was mislooked at the time. But I hope that you will remember corn. And I grew up in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, where the nuclear research was done in the 40s. So I was an Appalachian, a Cherokee Appalachian, that suddenly an entirely different culture came in, a secret culture, one that fenced us in. And so we grew up there. I was growing up where the future is right now, growing up in a very strange environment, but what cannot be destroyed are those values of family, connection, and independence, and survival. And Ronnie, thank you for your talk. I loved it. And thank you all for coming. I love being with you. Thank you. I want you all to see, if you haven't met him, Mike Canotti is right here, my husband. There he is.